Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, host of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Please join me on Friday, May 11th at 11 o'clock in the Bayfield Pavilion for the 16th annual live broadcast of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network.
Morning Edition, Classical Music, Wisconsin Life. These programs and many more are possible thanks to listener support. You can learn more about WPR programs, schedules, and so much more at WPR.org. Thank you.
For most of my adult life, I've tuned into public radio. I would encourage the listeners of WPR to contact their human resources, suggest that they would love for the organization that they work for to match contributions. It's a win-win because you have the company supporting their employees in a very creative way. I'm Miguel from Madison, and the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, my employer, matches my gift to Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to a special live edition of Hear Me Out. In this hour, we're talking about a series of explosions and fires last week at the Husky Energy Oil Refinery that injured at least 20 people and forced a temporary evacuation in the city. Our guests this hour are Superior Mayor Jim Payne, Douglas County Emergency Management Director Keith Kessler, and Superior Fire Chief Steve Panger. We do want to let listeners know that we did invite Husky Energy to take part in this discussion, but they declined, saying their focus right now is on the response. So we'll be taking your questions about the emergency response, evacuation, and ongoing recovery. What's on your mind? 715-395-1791 is the number to call. Again, that number is 715-395-1791. Thanks, gentlemen, for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Thank you.
Well, first off, I know it's been a trying week for you all, so how are you all holding up?
Well, I'm okay. It's a nice day. It's of course, been a busy week, and the biggest challenge right now is making sure that the public is informed about what actually happened, what is happening ongoing, and what the future looks like at the refinery and around our community.
And things are changing a lot, and there's a lot of new details that are coming out. And I wanted to draw attention to some questions that you've answered, Mayor, on the website, on the Douglas County website, and a lot of other resources that are out there that will seek to answer a number of people's questions, whether it's related to air quality, water quality, the response and evacuation. But before we go to the phones, I want to talk about emergency response. You know, the city and county has had its share of emergencies before with the 2012 flood, the Garamond Road fire, and then the benzene spill from a train derailment in the early 90s. Keith, I'll start with you. Is this like anything you've ever dealt with before?
Well, with the benzene spill, I was involved with that, and obviously with the Garamond Road fire. We haven't dealt with a scenario at the refinery that was this significant ever before, but the team came together and done everything they were supposed to do. The safety measures worked as they were supposed to protect some of the more dangerous chemicals. It went off pretty well. And, you know, you'd asked how we're doing, and, you know, our department, our agency is doing fine. The scary part is that we are now gearing up for one of potentially the worst fire days that we're going to have
right. All
season. So we're on to the next issue almost already.
Because it's pretty dry and humid out there.
That's
right,
correct. There's really staffed big for fires today and over the weekend.
Okay. Well, Chief Panger, I know you've done a lot of training with Calumet and under Murphy and Husky, just as well as Enbridge, on all of the products that they've got there, and they have their own emergency response team. So can you talk about how you prepare before this fire and explosion happened?
I can. As you brought up some of those previous incidents, I think one of the things that has changed a lot is every time post-incident, we've learned a lot from those things. We learned a lot since the benzene spill. In between that time, 9/11 made a lot of changes to our agencies. So I think the preparation that you saw in this incident was really a result of a lot of learning from some of those previous incidents. We've been training steadily, and we have a partnership with Enbridge and Husky and Plains Midstream, specifically for these types of responses. We know that with these facilities, it's very important to have a good industrial fire response. That was really one of our biggest focuses with that group when we created that group. Lots of our training is focused on that industrial fire. We've been going and training with the Husky group, the Emergency Response Team group, or we call them the ERT, training in our area, or we've been going to specialized schools for industrial fire training as well. So
right, because you've done some training in Texas and Colorado related to the crude oil derailments when that was a concern, when we were seeing more traffic related
right,
to that.
Exactly. I think we've been able to take opportunities when they've presented themselves. The crude by rail was a very big issue in the last 5 years, and within the last 5 years, and we were able to send almost our entire staff out to crude by rail training out in Pueblo, and much of that training was covered by Burlington Northern. We also cover through the partnership, we cover training. We go down to Corpus Christi, and now we are going down to a Williams school down in Texas for some also some industrial fire training.
Okay. So before any of this ever happened, you already knew the layout of the refinery. You already knew things that were there.
We did. We spend a lot of time. And just like any other facility, too, we don't go in and push those people aside and say, okay, and not use them. Those people are experts at their facility. They know how things work. It's really important for us to work beside them and support them, as well as, you know, do our job. You can't do that. You can't wait to do that. You have to prepare. That has to be part of your emergency response plan.
You don't want to be finding it out on the day of.
Exactly.
Well, I just want to remind people that if you have questions for Chief Panger, Mayor Payne, or Douglas County Emergency Management Director Keith Kessler, you can call in, and that number is 715-395-1791. Again, that number is 715-395-1791. You're listening to Hear Me Out here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Some people have raised questions about the evacuation and the information that was going out at the time, you know, about how large the evacuation area was or where to go. Can one of you talk about how you were coordinating that response?
Sure. That the decision of where to evacuate was a joint decision of the Unified Command. It involved the battalion chief from the fire department, people from Calumet, and I just don't remember everybody that was at the table at the time. I don't remember for sure if the DNR had arrived yet or if the EPA were there. But it was mutually agreed on after working through computer software and things that we should evacuate an area 10 miles long, 6 miles wide, south of the refinery, and a one-mile radius around the refinery. And the reason for the variations and the reason it was 6 miles wide is we were getting continual updates from the weather service with spot weather forecasts of what the wind was going to do. And it was known that the wind was going to waffle a little bit between the southwest and the southeast, so we made the evacuation zone wide enough so as the tail of that dog wagged a little bit, we stayed within the boundaries that we evacuated.
Okay. And so were you also, I mean, at that time, you were basing it on the amount of product that was there at the refinery, right?
That's correct. That tank had, I believe, 15,000 pounds of hydrofluoric acid in it versus the 77,000 that is the maximum capacity.
Well, a lot of people have voiced concern about the hydrogen fluoride or hydrofluoric acid that is there at the refinery. I want to play a clip here. Ron Koopman is a retired scientist, and he studied the release of chemicals like hydrogen fluoride during his career at the Lawrence Livermore National Lab. And here's what he had to say about that chemical, hydrogen fluoride.
So it is a very dangerous and hazardous chemical of its own, but it is used in refineries as part of a process. And, of course, the chemical and the refinery industry is used to using hazardous chemicals, so this is just one of the most dangerous.
So he said this chemical, if it's released, can destroy tissue in horrible ways and go down to the bone. I guess I'm wondering what was going on behind the scenes to prepare for a potential release of hydrogen fluoride if that were to occur.
So I can answer that. The part of our training is obviously when we're working with the ERT and we're working with Husky, we're concentrating on that area as well. So it's not just fire response. We're a hazmat team. We cover the northwest part of Wisconsin, a level 2 hazmat team. So that's part of our training as well. That area has a lot of protections as well in it. So it's a well-marked and special area in the refinery. So we do give a lot of consideration and a lot of attention to that HF and that it's safe. And I can tell you that during the whole time during that fire, that area was very well protected. The safeties that were in place, the what we call the deluge system, which is not to keep the area cool necessarily. The deluge is creates a fog and totally encapsulates that area to knock down any vapor if any vapor were to be released. And then obviously we also had monitors on there during that operation. What most people saw from up above was obviously they saw the fire. There was a lot of fire. On the ground, there was actually strike teams going in and walking around that area, around the HF, to make sure everything was working well and that it wasn't being exposed
and
to
my
heat.
Understanding is that by having that deluge system, if you capture it in the moisture, it keeps it closer to the ground, and then you don't have to worry about it becoming airborne and it becomes less of a threat. Is that right?
Correct. It's okay. Intended to knock the vapor down, yeah.
Okay. The words I heard is, you know, we're aware that there were multiple levels and safety devices. And when we speak of the evacuation is actually like the fifth level of protection for the citizens. Four things at the refinery there would have had to fail: the deluge system, the flaring off, the recovery of the liquids. So the evacuation area, we didn't expect the tank to fail, but we were preparing for it in the event that it did. But multiple systems would have had to fail before there would have been a release off-site, and it never got past the first safety system.
Well, okay. And I think we had multiple plans for even in the event that it did fail. So there were really three potential plans. You know, what are we doing to prevent a release of that gas? And there was, as you heard, there were multiple stages to prevent that, multiple tools to prevent that from ever happening at all. Then there was, what do we do in the event that it is released? And that's where the evacuation comes in. We want to get as make sure there are as few people as possible in the path of it in the event that it was released. And finally, what do we do if people are exposed to it? And there was a pretty detailed medical plan to make sure that medical professionals and first responders were capable of treating victims as quickly and effectively as possible in the event of an exposure. So there were multiple levels of protection.
Mayor, I want to come back to you on, you know, that plan for treating people if they had been exposed to it. Right now, we're going to go to the phone. We've got Bob from Gordon. He's got some questions about, you know, the safety of planting a garden, I believe. Hold on one second. Bob, you're live on the air.
Yes, I am here.
Go ahead with your question.
One of my neighbors told me, and I live in Gordon, that a cone south of the refinery, people should not be planting gardens. Is that true, and how big is that cone, and where does it stretch?
I would suggest that you contact the UW Extension office. There are people there that are looking at the agricultural aspects of it, and I believe they could probably answer your question certainly better than I can. And I, Mayor or Chief, any input on that?
Well, I mean, we can say Douglas County Public Health did release a statement about if you see soot, if there's a visible presence from that cloud that you can see, that you can wash it off. Huskies released a statement that effectively the rain and snow that's already happened since the event should have cleared away any particulate matter that could be a threat. If you're feeling nervous about it, it's Bob, right? If you're feeling nervous about it, plant flowers. Have a pretty garden instead of an edible one this year.
Sure. Well, and there's just so many, with anything like this, there's so many rumors out there, and whatever you hear, that usually isn't true. So I'm just trying to quantify what one of my neighbors told me.
I think one of the important things we need to remember, we're only a little over a week from the event, and so there are a lot of effects that will have to be studied for some time. One thing worth noting, we've had a refinery and an industrial city overall for a very long time. So we will continue to study it. I think Mr. Kessler's right that there are scientists looking at it. We're going to keep studying the soil and find out what we know. If you feel nervous, again, there's nothing wrong at all with taking extra precautions. But so far, what we know is what we've learned so far is that it's basically a treatable situation that you should be able to clean everything right off and have a healthy garden.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Bob, for the call. You know, I did see a report from KBJR who had interviewed a UMD professor, Steve Sternberg, about the possibility of, you know, exposure to the soil and soot that might have landed there. It sounded like from that report that it could last on the soil for up to a year, but he seemed to say that, you know, if you minimize your exposure to it, if you take precautions, it shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, even I listened to a lot of that report, and his statement was also very qualified that your exposure, the risk, is really a matter of how much are you exposed to, for how long were you exposed to it, and what's the vulnerability of the person or environment exposed to it. So if it's a particularly sensitive environment, maybe say a food garden, or, and I'm not saying I know this, I'm making some assumptions here based on what he said, but a particularly vulnerable victim might be in more danger than an otherwise healthy adult. If you spent a long time exposed to black smoke, there's more risk than if you came back into the path a couple of days later. So I think even he qualified that statement. But the most important thing to note is we need to study more.
Okay. You're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with you. Our guests in this hour are Superior Fire Chief Steve Panger, Superior Mayor Jim Payne, and Douglas County Emergency Management Director Keith Kessler. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Most of us wake up with alarms. We fumble around, reaching for our glasses, the snooze button, the light switch, and soon you're up and moving. Morning Edition helps you flip the light switch on your world. With the latest news updates and in-depth reporting, we help you see what's going on and really understand all of it. Start your day fully awake with Morning Edition. Listen every day.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include UW-Barron County Foundation and PTG Live Events. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. Go to wpr.org/sponsor. Support for WPR comes from the UW Health Breast Center, offering second opinions for more than 4,000 Wisconsin women and men diagnosed with breast cancer each year. More at uwhealth.org/second opinion.
Hi again, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. And in this hour, we're talking about the Husky Energy Refinery explosion last week and the following evacuation, response, and recovery that's ongoing. And with me in this hour are Superior Fire Chief Steve Panger, Superior Mayor Jim Payne, and Douglas County Emergency Management Director Keith Kessler. Mayor, before we took the call from Bob, you had talked about some of the things medically that were being prepared in the event that hydrogen fluoride were to be released. You know, what do we know about how prepared our medical community is to respond to something like this.
Well, what I know is that they said they were prepared on Thursday the 28th. We were in regular contact, and both of these gentlemen can answer it maybe even a little better than I, but Gold Cross was on scene with a number of vehicles ready to transport victims in the event of exposure. There's a chemical, and the fire chief might be able to answer this, but there's a chemical that we needed to treat exposure to hydrogen fluoride, and the hospitals in the area were ready to receive victims. Those are the reports I got that basically everybody said, we're ready to go.
Okay. Well, you also said earlier this week that alternatives to that chemical should be examined, but the focus was on the cleanup. By midweek, you and Duluth Mayor Emily Larson were calling for the refinery to stop using hydrogen fluoride. What changed for you over the course of those few days?
Well, I don't think anything changed. I think, except that we were moving further along in the winding down of the emergency response, moving towards the cleanup and into the investigation stage. Of course, I personally needed to learn more about hydrogen fluoride, about the refinery system, and try to make a statement from an informed standpoint. But one thing I should make clear, my position is not just that the refinery should be considering a different chemical. It's that it has to be safe every single day. That's the thing that I think Husky needs to be accountable for publicly, is what are the safety measures you have in place to protect against the release of hydrogen fluoride? And we've talked about a lot of those safety measures here this morning already.
Okay. Well, just want to remind listeners that we did invite Husky Energy to take part in this discussion. They declined, saying that they're focused on the response going forward. But here's what Refinery Manager Colin Shady had to say earlier this week when Governor Scott Walker was in town on Monday, when he was asked about whether the refinery would end its use of hydrogen fluoride.
Certainly going forward, we will be looking at all kinds of different options for the refinery configuration going forward. Right now, certainly, as everybody alluded to, our main concern is to try to understand exactly what happened here, get a very thorough investigation, work very closely with the EPA, all the federal and local regulatory agencies, and make sure we really know what's happening. And that's right now, that's our true priority. After that, we'll start working on the assessment and go forward.
Mayor Payne, did you hear anything different? Because you met with company leaders on Tuesday.
Their response was basically the same. They had a few more details about the cost and the infrastructure challenges of making a conversion like that. They did say that it would be a significant cost. They didn't believe that hydrogen fluoride at the time, and again, still very early, but they didn't believe that the hydrogen fluoride tank was compromised enough to be reimbursable through insurance. So it would be a total cost borne by the company. So, but beyond that, they really didn't go into much more detail than Mr. Shady did.
Okay. Well, I again just want to remind callers, if you have questions about the recovery, the response, or the evacuation, you can call in at 715-395-1791. That's 715-395-1791. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out. We're with Superior Fire Chief Steve Panger, Superior Mayor Jim Payne, and Douglas County Emergency Management Director Keith Kessler. You know, what about the information we're getting about air and water quality? Bob raised a question about, you know, how this might all affect growing, but the EPA did monitoring on volatile or organic chemicals. They found very low trace levels the day after the fire. I just want to play another clip here from Dave Morrison. He's the EPA on-scene coordinator, and this is what he had to say about the asphalt that burned in last week's fire.
The asphalt has very heavy components. It does not have a lot of volatile components to it, and a lot of those small fractions of volatile chemicals that are usually the toxic ones are consumed in the fire. So we didn't expect to find a lot of volatile chemicals.
Now, you know, the EPA has largely turned over monitoring to the company with oversight from federal agencies. We're hearing that there's nothing to worry about related to air quality. People are still concerned. I know that that was something that was raised, Mayor, at the Superior City Council this week. What were some of the things that you were hearing from people?
Just that. Is it safe to breathe the air? And how is it being tested? And I believe we've released all that information. I appreciated Mr. Collins from the EPA saying exactly what they were testing for. And they did. They tested pretty much from the end of the fire on Thursday for a couple of days after that. And with nothing new entering the atmosphere, with no fire, there just was and not really finding anything of concern. There's really no reason to keep testing beyond the ongoing air quality testing that already happens around the refinery.
Okay. Well, we know now that, again, monitoring has largely turned over to the company, and they have a third-party contractor called GHD. And they are posting a lot of information on the Douglas County website. And they also, I just want to draw people's attention to some frequently asked questions that Husky Energy has put out there related to the asphalt that burned, air quality, and foam and the fire. You know, right after the response on Friday, that things started shifting once the fire was out to the cleanup phase. And what kind of role were you guys playing, or what did you know as far as how they were reacting to gather product or prevent things from reaching Lake Superior? I know people have been concerned about stuff going off of the refinery site down Newton Creek towards the lake.
Yeah, it's important to note that that refinery is a lot of the way that refinery is designed is the runoff winds up going back into their fire ponds. So they collect a whole lot of water through their fire ponds. There is Newton Creek also flowing through that area, and they boom that almost immediately to make sure that they could catch any runoff. And I think there was not only primary booming, there was secondary booming down the way towards the lake. So they had it boomed. One of the things, comments about the foam, a lot of people, that can be a concern. However, some of the foam that we used on that is fluorine-free foam. So it's a newer foam that is more environmentally friendly, does not have those fluorines that are persistent in the environment. So that foam was foam that was purchased and used from Enbridge, and it was part of the partnership resources.
Okay. Yeah, I know that someone had brought that up at the Superior City Council meeting, that they were worried about the environmental impacts of the firefighting foam that was used, but that was... That's more limited than other types of foam you could have?
Right. It's really a shift that they're making, and a lot of states are requiring it now. So, but those foams are new, pretty new to the product line, and of course, when we made the decision to select the correct foam and purchase it, they wanted to be progressive about that too as well, and buy the what they would call the green foam.
Okay.
They also deployed pumps. If you remember on some of the pictures that were on the media, you saw two or three big large orange pumps, and they deployed those pumps to pump the runoff from the various ditches and whatever back into those fire ponds. And the DNR pretty much took over the monitoring and the booming of Newton Creek. They were on that pretty fast.
Okay. And I know when we talked on Friday, Keith, you had said that there was no indication that any of that had reached the lake.
And that was information I had received from the Department of Natural Resources.
Okay. Well, one of the things related to the firefighting foam I saw on Mayor Payne's Facebook page is one of the residents in town was wondering about stocking of more foam. Are you going to get more now that you've had to use that in the response, or what happens next?
We do, and surprisingly, we didn't use that much foam compared to what we actually have in stockpile. We calculated we only used about 5,000 gallons of foam, which is we have at least 25,000 gallons in the area. So we had foam coming up from the supplier the day of the incident. They were making foam. And they put it on a trailer, and it was there the next day to restock the supply that we had used.
Okay.
The Wisconsin Division of Emergency Management also has several stocks of foam throughout the state. At this time, I believe the closest one is at Volk Field, but as they get additional dollars, there's a plan to put another stock further north. You can only guess where we're lobbying for that additional stock to be.
Somewhere close by, I hope.
I think that's an important point, too, is this partnership has created a working relationship with other refineries, too, and other facilities. So there's two facilities down in the cities. They were facilities that we could call, and they also were ready to provide resources if we needed them. So there are sources of foam and even help as far as firefighting help if we needed that in other areas. Mm-hmm. And some areas that are a little closer to us in Wisconsin, we're a long way away from some pretty much everywhere else in Wisconsin, but for Minneapolis, where it's a closer proximity, so sometimes the resources coming from there are going to come quicker.
Okay. We had also, during the day, been working through the political process to get, correct me if I'm wrong here, Steve, but the 148th firefighting unit from the air base in Duluth. In fact, when the guys on the ground knocked that fire down, we actually had to cancel some of those responses because we'd received the green light to get them. So we had to turn them around, as we did the foam stock from Volk Field.
Well, better to have it coming your way than to not.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, want to remind listeners, you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guests are Superior Mayor Jim Payne, Douglas County Emergency Management Director Keith Kessler, and Superior Fire Chief Steve Panger. We're talking about the Husky Energy fire and explosion last week. We're taking questions from callers about the evacuation response and ongoing recovery efforts. What's your question? 715-395-1791 is the number. Again, that's 715-395-1791. Steve, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about all the things that you're thinking about when you're fighting this fire. Because, I mean, everybody knows that the refinery is close to the Enbridge terminal, and then you also had some propane tanks nearby. So what are all the things that are on your mind as you're trying to douse this blaze?
I think, as far as operations go, obviously number one is safety, making sure everyone's safe, they're accounted for. When that fire initially started, there was really, they had to pull back and kind of reassess and try to figure out what they were dealing with, how much product, how much it spread. We are thinking about neighboring facilities, but they are properly spaced in the event that, you know, something does happen, that usually the spacing and some of those precautions that are normally taken are adequate. So, but obviously we're worried about exposures. Enbridge was over there the whole time. They were with us in the command post, and they were extremely helpful. And obviously we were in contact with them right away, because even if they weren't in threat, necessarily from the fire, they were still in the drift zone. So they're literally helping us monitor, because they have monitors over their entire area in over at their terminal. So I think just initially you're certainly trying to assess what you're basically, whether you're on a defensive mode or an offensive mode, making sure you have enough resources, making sure the operations are getting whatever resources they need as far as equipment and manpower. And then, really the strategic or the tactics and strategies are made by operations right on the ground on scene. So they are the eyes and ears on that scene. I can tell you that the use of drones in this was really instrumental. It was really difficult for them to see exactly where the fire was, how far it was spread, because the foam or the smoke was banking down so much, making visibility difficult. But once they got that drone up, they could kind of see the footprint of the product and where it was burning, and then they were able to formulate a plan for making an offensive attack on that.
Was that the one from the Superior Police Department?
It was, yes.
Which you just used for the first time recently.
Yes, at the Cooper School. We also used it on that, and then they were there at the Husky Fire.
Okay.
You know, well, I was glad the chief brought up the spacing of at-risk facilities. One of the conversations that we had with Husky officials when the governor was in town, when we were walking around the site, was, well, they still have to evaluate the damage that took place at the refinery. In the event that a tank has to be reconstructed, which is possible, Husky officials said it doesn't necessarily need to be reconstructed in the same place. So there's potentially an opportunity to lessen the risk even further by spreading those tanks apart even further.
Really? Okay. Well, I want to come back to that, but we have a caller on the line. Chris from Port Wing has a question about air quality. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. How's it going? Thanks so much for the show. It's a great show, and I want to thank all the public officials for their really impressive responses to the challenging situation. I had a quick question, two quick questions. One, now that the EPA has turned over the air monitoring to Husky, how do our public officials and how can the public access the air quality information in an ongoing fashion? And the second question was, considering the localized pollution around private and public sites near the site of the accident, what responsibility is Husky going to take for compensating people who've gotten their property sorted up? Thanks very much.
Thanks, Chris, for the call. Mayor, did you want to take that one about the claims? Or?
Yeah, so Husky has posted a number, and they're posting it just about everywhere they can. It's in the newspaper, I think, again today. It's posted on their own website, of course. I've posted it on my Facebook page, and I've noticed them sponsoring a post on Facebook as well. So that if you have a claim of any kind, just call the number, especially if it relates to cleanup. If you say, hey, I've got, I can see soot on my house, I need to bring somebody out to pressure wash it, I don't know, call. And generally they've been closing claims pretty quickly. I spoke to them on Tuesday of this week, and they'd closed, meaning they had paid out 60 claims already at that point. So they're, the way they said it, it's usually not a check is in the mail situation. Usually they can pay out that day.
I know Husky Energy spokeswoman Kim Guttormson said yesterday they had received roughly 750 claims as of midday yesterday. And there was a clarification that you made too, Mayor, about whether or not people would have to sign a liability of release or a waiver related to their claims. And that is not being required except for medical or bodily injury claims, right?
That's what they clarified to me yesterday. So when I asked them on Tuesday pretty directly, are you requiring people to sign release of liability forms? And they said no. And then it turned out, yes, for medical and bodily injury claims, they are requiring that. They clarified that with us yesterday.
Okay. Before the call, you were talking about spacing of the tanks. Is that something that you discussed with Husky Energy, or have they said anything about the layout and what they're considering?
Oh, they're nowhere near that close. It was something they mentioned as a possibility, that if there is a total reconstruction of a tank, that they could look at other sites. It was really a narrow conversation, but it showed to me that they are considering all methods of making that refinery a safer site.
Okay. We've got another question. Cheryl didn't want to go on the air, but Cheryl from Superior wants to know, why didn't emergency sirens go off for the fire? Can we have a warning siren for events like this? Were there sirens that went off?
I think that's you.
Okay. Well, currently the city of Superior does not have outdoor warning sirens. Some years back, FEMA made the determination that outdoor warning sirens were not the best method of warning people, and they focused us in emergency management to work with the National Weather Service and the emergency alert system, and that puts it out on TV, it puts it out on radio. We also have a code red public alerting system that was used, and that sent notice out to everyone in the evacuation area, and then we use that countywide for the all clear to come back. And we are opening that up. If you go on the Douglas County website, you will find the phone number, the contact information, and it may even be how you could sign up to get your cell phones now listed on that Code Red system. So if you have a cell phone, in the past, we'd been hesitant to do that because if you're in California and there is an event in Superior, your phone is going to go off in California because it's not area specific, it's phone number specific. But at this point, we have decided that we will open that up and allow cell phones to be registered because the majority of the calls we're receiving in our 911 center these days are from cellular. Cellular is really taking over the market.
And people were being notified on landlines, but not on cells.
Through the code red system, that would be correct.
Okay. Hey,
Danielle, it occurs to me we forgot to answer one of the questions from the caller about where air quality data can be found. So especially now that it's being turned over to Husky, I just wanted to say again that that information is posted at Douglas County's website. As they get new information, they post that right away.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that. We're going to take another break real quickly. You're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we've been talking about the Husky Energy refinery explosion and fire that happened last week and the evacuation response and ongoing recovery. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin Public Radio counts on you to tell your friends about the programming you count on every day. Why not tell a friend about what you heard on the News Classical Network? 89.9 WHSA, 88.5 WSSU Superior, and 104.7 WHWA.
Wisconsin Public Radio's website is made for your mobile phone. Read the news from the state and the world, and listen to our streams. It's all formatted for your mobile phone or tablet. Stay on top of the news at WPR.org.
Support for WPR comes from Bernie's Rock Shop, showcasing new earth-centered inventory during their sidewalk market, May 11th through the 13th at both Madison locations, 901 East Johnson and 636 Park Street.
I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we're live taking questions from callers about the Husky Energy refinery explosion and fire that happened last week. We have Superior Fire Chief Steve Panger with us, as well as Superior Mayor Jim Payne and Douglas County Emergency Management Director Keith Kessler. Want to let callers know that that number again to call is 715-395-1791. Again, that number is 715-395-1791. And also want to remind listeners that we did reach out to Husky Energy to join us in this conversation today. They declined and said that their focus right now is on the response. But earlier this week, we've seen a number of officials. Congressman Sean Duffy was here this morning to meet with refinery officials and take a look at the damage. Governor Scott Walker was here on Monday. Senator Tammy Baldwin was here on Friday last week. What do you think is the role of government officials or federal officials now, you know, as we're trying to recover from this incident? What do you want to see as city and county officials from those leaders?
I suppose I should bite the bullet on this one, being the politician. So really, in the same way as a local community, we support the refinery protecting their own refinery. We want state and national government to support us to protect our own community. So that means making sure that our emergency response teams have the right tools and financial resources that they need to meet any emergency at all. It means ensuring that the refinery is appropriately regulated so that they have to meet a very high bar of safety within the community. And it means providing those things in a very timely fashion. When we tell them what we need, we expect them to be supportive. Nobody knows this community better than Superior. Nobody knows the refinery better than Husky.
I'd like to add that I think, you know, an expectation I would have from the state and the feds is as the permit processes start for the rebuild, that they deal with those permits expeditiously and then follow through to confirm that the permits are adhered to.
I think also to add to that, it is this area is of statewide and federal concern. There's a lot that happens in Superior, and I think when we have situations like this, it really highlights that level of support that should come from the feds and from the state to help us with resources in this area for emergency response. We're a long way, particularly in the state, we're a long way from you know, from the next hazmat team, for instance. I think the closest it would be a level one team is in Eau Claire. The deployment for those resources sometimes are several hours away. There's a lot of, in a lot of ways, we have to be self-sufficient in this area of the state. And I think a recognition by specifically the state, Wisconsin Emergency Management, that, you know, this is an area that deserves some focus and some attention on emergency response.
And actually, if I could double down on that, I'm going to say very directly what the chief is trying to say here. We should be a level one hazmat team in Superior. We have a lot of hazardous materials in Superior, Wisconsin, and in Douglas County, in the Twin Ports as a whole. We deserve to be able to respond to those more effectively than waiting for a team to respond from Eau Claire. So we've had resources at that level before. I think the state should commit to making sure that we can meet some of the very serious potential risks that exist in this community.
What would that mean for you to become a level one hazmat team? What would be needed for that?
Well, specifically level one, they're NIMS, National Incident Management System compliant teams. So it's really a level of protection above what we have right now. And, of course, with that comes the funding. And back about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, we got a significant cut, 50% in our hazmat funding. And as I said, we're a team that's kind of has to be self-sufficient. So with that designation would come the funding that would support more training, more equipment, that sort of thing.
Is that state or federal funding?
It is state funding. It's a state program. You know, the designation that I talk about is actually federal.
To support what's being said here, I'd like to point out that, as they say, there's hazardous materials all around us. The products at the refinery fall under the extremely hazardous substance rules that we have to plan for. But you need to be aware there are numerous facilities like that. You actually get your groceries, you send your kids to school, you go swimming in facilities that are also owners of extremely hazardous substances. If you were watching the news last night, watching the carpet store burn in Cloquet, they were talking about the hazardous releases that were coming out of that building and the toxic fumes. It's all around us. It's in your couch, in your living room. I mean,
it's toxic. In your car.
Yeah, it's in your car. Any time that you have something burning, the way the products are made today, you have toxic releases.
I remember watching a report on WDIO about homes constructed and how they burn faster these days, right?
Yes, that's true. I mean, a typical home that was 100 years ago, or, you know, even less than that, was more what we would call ordinary combustion or combustibles. Now it's largely petroleum-based products that are in your home. We're surrounded by it right now with the foam on the walls and the carpet under our feet, even though there's not a lot of things in this room. This is the kind of products. They burn hotter, they're more toxic, and that is what we're finding in typical fires, is that we're reaching higher temperatures at a quicker or at a shorter time.
Say, Danielle, could I make a hard pivot here and just throw a pitch that I've been trying to talk about rehabbing old and historic homes for as long as I've been in office, and the fire chief just gave me one more reason.
Because they burn slower.
They're safer.
Yeah.
They are safer.
A firefighter is actually safer fighting a fire in a 100-year-old home than they are in a 5-year-old home.
Right. Well, I want to go to a question we got from someone who didn't want to be on the air, but we have a comment from Barbara from Superior. She lives near the UWS steam plant, and she heard an alert siren. She's wondering how many times the alert system was triggered, and did it go out to just part of the city or all of the city? I think she probably missed the earlier part of the program when you said, Keith, that we don't have an alert system.
That's correct. It is a local decision of each municipality whether they choose to have an outdoor warning system. And there are no outdoor warning systems anywhere in Douglas County. It's, as I said, the grants and things for that died or, you know, faded away decades ago. And the sirens they're hearing, I know that Husky and I believe Plains and probably Enbridge all have internal warning devices that include sirens and public address systems. Those are not intended for the public. Those primary purpose for those are for plant evacuation because they have so many people working outside. They need an outdoor type device. What we found is, you know, throughout the country is you can be very, very close to an outdoor warning device. And if you are in your home or in your car, you don't hear it. Mm-hmm. That's why they've switched to using the emergency alert system and National Weather Service and that method, because that hammers out over all the media.
Well, you've all kind of mentioned funding here as an issue, and I guess I'm just wondering, did we have what we needed to be able to adequately address this fire and explosion? I know you were calling in mutual aid and everything, but is this something that you can totally be prepared for? Or, I mean, for example, the Superior Fire Department had received FEMA funding, the SAFER grant, and you're currently down one person, right?
That's correct. That granting ran out. That funding ran out last year. So so that did provide us with a, and no doubt we... We noticed that that staff reduction of firefighters that was provided previously by the SAFER. It definitely does impact our response and even our daily operations. As far as the resources and were we prepared for this, I think that was one of the success stories. We found after all of this was done that largely we handled this with our own resources that we had, not only at the refinery, our foam caches, our equipment, that some of that was purchased only in the last couple years that we utilized, our training, all of the responders in the command post, all the agencies. We work with them all the time. These are faces that come into the command post, and we know them. We know them by name. We recognize them. So a lot of the resources that we saw are from the area, and I think that was one of the real success stories.
You know, I think the chief makes a really good point. Our firefighters were prepared to fight this fire. They had the materials that they needed to fight this fire. But a very fair question is, do we have enough firefighters? And while we might be able to say that because they effectively, along with the Husky ERT, they were able to fight the fire, we had a near total response on site there. Nearly all of our firefighters were working in some way or another on this fire. And I don't mean to sound alarmist, but what if another house had started on fire? That can happen. What if there's a major accident somewhere, especially in the course of an evacuation? There are other risks throughout the community that we had to divert from. It would have been very, very challenging to meet those risks while we have a total response on this very major fire. So it's a very fair question to ask, do we have enough firefighters, regardless of how well and how supplied our current fire department is? That's something that we absolutely need to explore pretty much right now.
So I just want to make sure people do realize, however, that when we call all of those firefighters back, we had everyone on the department except two were called back. They saw the urgency. I mean, we sent it out when we paged people out, the urgency of the call, and we got a great response. However, a lot of those firefighters, when they come back in, they immediately fill in the station. So just so people realize that not everyone was down at Husky at the same time. We eventually rotated crews in there, and then, of course, the stations were being covered, and they received calls during that time and handled them just fine. But certainly overall, staffing is always critical, especially a long incident like this. Everyone was pretty much there for 48 hours. It took a couple days, I think, for everyone to catch up on their rest. And
also, before we end the program, I really want to touch on the next phase, which is the investigation. We have federal agencies, OSHA, and the Chemical Safety Board, who are in town looking into what happened, what exactly went wrong. Earlier this week, I spoke to Tom Zoller. He's a senior advisor with the Chemical Safety Board, and they have a four-person team in town. And here's what he had to say about what they're looking into related to the fluid catalytic cracking unit, which is where the initial explosion occurred. They're going to be doing a metallurgical analysis. Here's what he had to say.
What they will look to determine is were there cracks in the metal, fatigue in the metal that weakened it, so that during the process of the shutdown, when there were temperature or pressure changes, that the metal failed and gave way, causing it to break apart.
And my understanding is that team has not been able to access the refinery. That's as of earlier this week. That may have changed, but you know, because of the stability of the site, and that those investigations will take, well, the OSHA investigation will take anywhere in the next 6 months, and the Chemical Safety Board investigation could take 2 to 3 times as long. What's the communication like between city and county officials and those who are investigating this?
Well, city and county officials basically live together. We're right next to each other in the same building, so we talk pretty frequently. The more important communication is between those investigating agencies and, I believe, the public. So they're going to be briefing us. They're going to be releasing information as they have it. And as you pointed out, that's not going to be right away. If they do have some initial findings, particularly of concern to public health or safety, yes, they would release that right away. But we're going to be waiting a little bit for the final report and the final conclusions. My message to those agencies, and I've met with a few of them, is just release what you got when you got it. And we'll make sure to put that up, of course, on the county website and release it to traditional media as well.
That's a good reminder for anyone who's listening that if you're looking for information about what's coming out related to air quality or water quality or most anything related to the refinery fire and explosion, you can find it on the Douglas County website at douglascountywi.org. I think I got that right. And then also Superior's Husky Energy, they have a site, huskyenergy.com/superior/FAQs for frequently asked questions for the company related to the burning asphalt. Everything that was released, you can find that at huskyenergy.com/superior/FAQs. Any final comments in the last 2 minutes we've got in the program?
I'd just like to comment on the fact that we don't want to forget all of the help we received from our neighbors, be it the city of Duluth, be it the communities that sent ambulances. We had volunteer ambulance services in from the rural county, from the neighboring counties, from the neighboring state to assist us. And, you know, I think it speaks well for our responders that originally we were thinking this fire could last up to several days, and they had it out by 5 o'clock in the evening. And in preparation, in case that didn't happen, we also had access to the statewide mutual aid box alarm system called MABUS. The chief and I were in communication on whether we needed to activate that or not, and I was repeatedly in contact with the president of that organization, keeping them abreast of what was done. But our responders stood tall.
They did a good job.
Yeah, I would agree. The area, we have such good relationships, not only with the resources that we have with this with the petroleum partners, but it goes out from there, all the agencies, and with Duluth Fire. Duluth Fire was there from the beginning in the initial call out, and you know, just all the agencies that we have such a good relationship. Not only here in Wisconsin, but out in Duluth as well. It was really a successful thing.
The term that was used at one point is this was a borderless response.
Yeah.
Well, I think everybody in the Twin Ports community feels like there are no borders here. So
that's right.
I really appreciate all of you here today taking questions from the community about the evacuation and the response and the ongoing recovery. Thank you so much, Superior Fire Chief Steve Panger, Douglas County Emergency Management Director Keith Kessler and Superior Mayor Jim Payne, we really appreciate you being here. You've been listening to a special live one-hour program about the Husky Energy Refinery explosions and fires that happened last week. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.